Hey, this is Rick Kubik, a.k.a. Johnny Kick, drummer from Matter Rose. You're listening to the Dark Stuff Podcast.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Dark Stuff Podcast. We're at number 24. We're continuing with my series of less than adequately appreciated and or obscure bands from the 90s that I think happened to be really, really great. And the last podcast, number 23, was on San Francisco band The Mommy Heads. This one, number 24, is on the New York City rock band Matter Rose. Now, Matter Rose started in the early 90s, like I said. Their first album came out in 1993. It was called Bring It Down. The album took the indie or college music world by storm. I remember back in 1993, it was something of an instant smash. The band was heralded by the British press, back when it was really significant, the British press, that is, as the second coming of the Velvet Underground. Only this band had a female singer, and I know that Velvet Underground did work with Nico for a little while, but I never liked Nico, frankly. I thought she shouldn't have been in the band, and Lou Reed should have sung all those songs. I know that's a controversial opinion in some circles, but I'm digressing. The band featured guitarist and primary songwriter Billy Cote, singer Mary Lorson, bass player Matt Verderay, and drummer Johnny Kick. Johnny, of course, also known as Rick Kubik. That was the name that he used. That's his given name on the final two Matter Rose albums. Rick was actually nice enough to talk to me on the phone for an interview for the podcast. I contacted him through the Matter Rose MySpace page, which is legit. He runs it himself. It's myspace.com/MatterRose. Frequently puts up some rare recordings on there, so you might want to check it out. Makes for some good listening. Anyhow, let me have Rick or Johnny, whichever we'll call him Rick, okay, because that's what he's called now. We'll let Rick tell you about how the band formed, and we're going to kind of go through the chronology of the band, talk about each of the records, and sort of what everyone has been up to since then, and the possibility, the slight possibility, of a Matter Rose reunion.
Well, actually, Billy was working for Andy Warhol, and he was looking to put together, he had some songs, and he was like kind of making demos and stuff, and I'm not positive on how he met Mary. I think it was through a friend, because I think Mary was living in Boston. And I guess Mary came down to New York and, did some demo work with Billy. And it kind of worked out for the sound he was going for. It kind of just blended. And after the fact, I was just like lingering around in New York, bouncing from band to band, and I had met this guy, Matt Verderay, who was the original bass player in Matter Rose. And he worked for Andy Warhol and knew Billy. But when I met Matt, I didn't know that. And I think it was maybe about a year later, Matt came to my house on a Sunday afternoon and said he had this friend, Billy, who had found this vocalist, and they had some label interest, and Matt, being a guitar player, was going to take over the bass. He was going to play bass guitar for Matter Rose. And then they said, oh, they're going to get signed and all that, and kind of went there and met everyone, and we kind of all hit it off, and we did a really horrible show as far as for a showcase. We showcased for a few major labels, and didn't really play all that much. We had maybe 6-7 songs that we rehearsed a little bit and did the showcase on the Lower East Side, and I think about 2 weeks after the fact, Atlantic showed interest and really wanted to sign us. Yeah, I was with the band. Believe me, I've been banging my head against the wall for years, and this kind of, we rehearsed a few times and did the showcase, and we weren't really seasoned, you know. Well, it couldn't have been more than, maybe I was with them about 4 or 5 months when we got signed.
The name of that song is Beautiful John by Matter Rose on the Dark Stuff podcast. That is the song that kicks off the debut album, Bring It Down, a pretty much flawless album from this reporter's perspective. It can be real dark and mysterious at times. The lyrics can be sometimes real crazy or real reflective or real romantic or real just a great variety. Billy Cote, I mentioned, is the primary songwriter, but Mary Lorson did write a handful of songs. I'd say it usually goes about 60-40, maybe 70-30 on some albums. I'm going percentage-wise in terms of who wrote what. But, of course, Mary sang, all of the songs. Now, at this time, there were a lot of bands that were coming out. This was a really, really strong period of time for female-fronted bands. There were groups, you know, people like Juliana Hatfield. There were artists like Lush, Velocity Girl, Breeders, Belly. And all those bands are great, and I love almost all of the ones that I mentioned, but Matter Rose had this real edge, this sort of darker side, this dissonance, especially with the chaotic and noisy guitars, and we all know how much I love chaotic and noisy guitars. The band members might not have been seasoned when they made that first album, but you could hardly tell. They sound like they were a band that was playing together for decades. That debut album, Bring It Down, was produced by a guy named Kevin Salem, and here Rick tells us how he got the gig.
Well, the strange thing is that our lead singer, Mary, was dating him at the time. Kevin got the job as producer. I know for a fact that, like, Billy and Kevin kind of rubbed elbows at points during the production of the record. But all in all, I think that record came out really well. I mean, out of the box, it did really well. You know, we really got a big push. Atlantic, being on Seed, they wanted to make it look more like an indie label. Anyway, they came out the box and it did fairly well. The Atlantic pushed it more in England and parts of Europe. That's where we got our first big push. I mean, some of the first gigs we did were like, first we played New York, we did some showcases, and then they pushed us in Boston, and then they really pushed us in England. And so that first record, we started working on that first record. We recorded it in Philadelphia, studio a place called Studio Red. And maybe we worked on it about 8 months, and then came out in April '93, and then we started touring from then.
1, 2, 3, 4.
That was a rare Peel Session recording of the song 20 Foot Red that Rick actually emailed me, and so that's a little rarity there for you that I don't believe was ever commercially available. The band was actually a favorite of John Peel and appeared on the show a number of times, and there's an entire album's worth of songs. Before the album came out, the second album, Panic On, they did have an EP called Swim. The song at the very beginning of the show where they say, "Hey Rose, hey Matter," that's actually called Swim, and they released an EP around that song with a remix version of that song and, let's see, five other songs, including a cover of I Want to Sleep in Your Arms from Jonathan Richman, or the Modern Lovers, I don't remember exactly. And the band really had it going on that first album. They actually were able to make an improvement on Panic On. Panic On is my favorite album, and a lot of it has to do with the production.
We had Mark Fregard produce the second album. He was an English guy that I think he did work with, like, Eric Clapton, and he did the Breeders record. And we brought him in, and him and Billy co-produced that Panic On record. I mean, we were all kind of in on it, but Billy would primarily wanted to make it a little more roomy. I don't know exactly what his thoughts were on, like, Bring It Down. I thought it sounded fine myself, you know. I think Billy wanted a little more control on the production, and this Mark Fregard guy, he liked the way the Breeders sounded, and I think Panic On did really well too. It did a little better than Bring It Down, I think, out the box. Well, Well, I think Atlantic had a bigger idea. They thought it would go further. And at that time, we did too. We thought, well, maybe we'll get a bigger push in the U.S. You know, that's what we were expecting. The fact is, I mean, we were touring consistently through 93, 94. We didn't stop touring. We recorded, we came back from tour and recorded that record. We recorded in Hoboken, New Jersey, at Lenny Kravitz's studio. And we, you know, we are doing that. We took like a month to record, and we are still doing tour. You know, we are still touring consistently. So we're figuring we're going to get a bigger push on Panic On in the U.S., which we still had a really good audience in Europe. So I mean, we kept going back there because we did like Reading Fest. I think when Panic On came on, we headlined the second stage at Reading. Played Glastonbury Festival, did all those festivals. And, you know, it, like I said, in Europe it was better. And then when Panic On, when we were touring that in 94, we had good we had a good response on the East Coast, of course, Boston. Chicago was always really good. We always did well in Chicago. We played, you know, several different venues in Chicago, either opening for bands or doing our own show.
The name of that song is Happy New Year. It comes on the Panic On CD from Matter Rose. You're listening to the Dark Stuff podcast. And now we're going to move into a period of transition for the band Matter Rose. In 1993, 94, 95, the band toured pretty heavily, opening for people like A Hole and Juliana Hatfield and Belly, and headlining their own shows and playing, you know, all over the world. They took a bit of a break in 1995, and in that period of time, the original bassist Matt Verderay left the band. He was replaced by a guy named Chris Giammalvo, who had played previously with the group Eve's Plum, and he remained in the band till they broke up in 1999. Now, armed with this new bass player, the band went into the studio, and when they reemerged in 1997 with their album Tragic Magic, the group received a little bit of a critical backlash, something that was completely unheard of for these guys before. Tragic Magic incorporated some different elements, some trip-hop elements, and these were intentional. The band was trying to change their sound, move into a different direction, but it was not necessarily received as well as they had hoped.
Yeah, it's weird because some of the people like that email me now, you know, maybe some of the younger people really like Tragic Magic other than our earlier stuff. But I think what happened was Billy started listening to a lot of different stuff. He wanted to get away from that guitar thing, which I thought we should stick with. I liked the way the first and second album sounded. And I understood what he was going after. And he was going after a little more, less guitar driven. And when we went with Tragic Magic, we did use some samples and some bites, and we used a little different instrumentation on the record. And it took quite a bit of time. I know in 96 we did some recording up in Ithaca, New York, and we did tracks for that record, and some of them didn't get quite where they were. I mean, we had quite a bit of it done, and then we went back. I know we did some touring in between, and then we went down to Louisiana, and we went to like right outside New Orleans, and spent a month, and that's where that Tragic Magic was done. We were still committed to do two more albums, you know. I mean, after Panic On, I think we had a four-record deal. So Tragic Magic came out, and it didn't meet... I don't think it met what Atlantic was looking for, you know, as far as their expectations. And the album did come out. They didn't really even push it. I mean, we did some touring. We went to Europe again. Did some festivals there. People seem to like it, and Atlantic dropped us like shortly after that was released. Some of the reviews in England and stuff were slamming us a little bit compared to Bring It Down and Panic On for what people expected us to continue. So I mean, we took a different slant on things, and then maybe it hurt us, but that was just what we did. We'll be right back.
song is called See Her Every Night. It comes on a CD single for the song My Star from Tragic Magic, which is the song that you heard just prior to that. I did want to point out that there are two versions of Tragic Magic. As Rick mentioned in the interview, the band was dropped by Atlantic. Shortly after Tragic Magic came out, they signed a new deal with an English label called Cooking Vinyl, who re-released Tragic Magic. They took two songs off the original and added two different ones. So there is a little, there's a reason if you are going around shopping and you find Tragic Magic, check on the back to see which version it is, because there are different songs. If you download the album now, and I checked, it's available on emusic.com, it is the Cooking Vinyl version. So the two tracks from the Atlantic version, you're going to have to dig around in a used bin for the CD. The band only made one more album after Tragic Magic. It was 1999's Hello June Fool. And I think what the band was going for on this record was sort of a combination of the two sounds. There's a little bit more guitar, a la Panic On and Bring It Down, but it also still has some of the sampling elements, some of the trip-hop elements. I think it's a better combination.
When Hello June Fool, we were pretty much, I felt a little jaded at the time, I guess, you know, but Cooking Vinyl gave us an offer to do Hello June Fool, which we did in upstate New York, and I felt that that could be a good thing. I felt pretty confident with the record and everything like that, and the way we put it together was more like kind of like reverting back. I don't know, I felt I was ready to go and, you know, continue on and try and make a go of it, you know. Although, you know, in England, we still went to England like in 99 and that. We had good momentum in England. We did like a show at the garage and turned out really well, and we still did some festivals, but I mean, we were kind of losing a little momentum there, maybe because we were a little less in the press after taking breaks. I think as a whole, I don't know, I didn't know if we were going to break up or not. You know, I thought we were going to make a go of it, or at least continue on and continue doing some shows and maybe making records, which Chris and I really wanted to do. And I think Mary and Billy wanted to do it too, but I think they maybe reached the point where, you know, we weren't all in New York. Mary and Billy were living upstate. Chris was still in New York. I moved back to the Midwest by then. And, so, I mean, we still got together. And when we tour, we record or whatever, we get together. And if we have a tour coming, we get together for a week and go out and do it. But I think it just reached a head where, how far can we go with it, you know? It was very sad because after being with the band for 9 years, I thought there would have been a little bit of a go at it. There was no mention. We didn't even know it was our last show. I didn't. Maybe Mary or Billy did, but I didn't. And I know we were doing some spot touring in the U.S., and the last show we did was in Buffalo, New York. I didn't even know the band broke up till I no one called me, you know, to say that we were breaking up. I think I read it online somewhere.
And thus, we are at the end of the story of Matt Arose. I did want to point out that when Matt Verderay left the band in 1994, he formed his own band called Speedball Baby, a kind of a garagier, bluesier band, along the lines maybe of John Spencer Blues Explosion. After Matt Arose ended, Mary Lorson formed a band called Saint Low. Billy Cote later joined her in the group and plays with them. The two are married now. They have a kid together. They also formed an in-group called the Piano Creeps, which, like I said, it focuses on a very, very different style of music than Matt Arose. And Rick Kubik plays in a band called the Cocktail Preachers. Rick pointed out that he has broached the subject with Mary and Billy about reforming the band and maybe trying out some new material. And they got kind of a lukewarm reception, so we don't know if it's actually going to happen, but it was not a definitive no. I pointed out a lot of great 90s bands are still touring these days or still making music, and in 2008 you certainly don't need a record label. I mean, they have enough of a reputation that they could just release songs directly through places like eMusic and iTunes and whatnot, and could tour sort of at their own leisure. Let's hope that happens. Anyways, I hope you enjoyed the show. You should try and make as much effort as you can to pick up the music from Matt Arose. The first two albums and those EPs are long out of print. However, if you do some digging and you're in a large enough city, you should be able to find a used copy. The final two albums are available digitally. I mentioned eMusic has both of them. iTunes has Hello June Fool. And perhaps one of these days, Atlantic will see fit to release those first two albums on iTunes. Okay, friends, thanks a lot for listening. This has been the Dark Stuff Podcast.
Feels like summer.
Transfer of data is complete.